Testament reading is from Book of Baruch, chapter 5, verse 1 to 9. Let us listen for the word of God. Take off the garment of your sorrow and affliction, O Jerusalem, and put on forever the beauty of the glory from God. Put on the robe of the righteousness that comes from God. Put on your head the diadem of glory of the everlasting. For God will show you splendor everywhere under heaven. For God will give you evermore the name Righteous Peace, Godly Glory. Arise, O Jerusalem, stand upon the height, look towards the east, and see your children gathered from west and east at the word of the Holy One, rejoicing that God has remembered them. For they went out from you on foot, led away by their enemies. But God will bring them back to you, carried in glory, as on a royal throne. For God has ordered that every high mountain and the everlasting hills be made low, and the valleys filled up to make level ground, so that Israel may walk safely in the glory of God. The woods and every fragrant tree have shaded Israel at God's command. For God will lead Israel with joy, in the light of his glory, with the mercy and righteousness that come from him.
Our New Testament reading today is from Luke chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. It was now the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius, the Roman emperor. Pontius Pilate was governor over Judea. Herod Antipas was ruler over Galilee. His brother Philip was ruler over Iturea and Trachonitis. Licinius was ruler over Abilene. Annas and Caiaphas were the high priests. At this time, a message from God came to John, son of Zechariah, who was living in the wilderness. Then John went from place to place on both sides of the Jordan River, preaching that people should be baptized to show they had repented of their sins and turned to God to be forgiven. Isaiah had spoken of John when he said, "He is a voice shouting in the wilderness. Prepare the way for the Lord's coming. Clear the road for him. The valleys will be filled and the mountains and hills made level. The curves will be straightened and the rough places made smooth. And then all people will see the salvation sent from God." This is the word of the Lord. So, when gold was discovered here in California in 1849, the fastest way you could get here was in a ship. It took about 2 months to get from New York to San Francisco if you had a good passage. Of course, that was quite a while, and people wanted to get there as fast as they could and faster. So the fastest way of traveling at the time was a railroad. And the railroad went as far as Omaha in the East Coast, and there was no railroad here. So several corporations began building lines towards each other as fast as possible. They started in about 1862 by the time they had all the land grants sorted out and things moving forward, and these two rail lines started moving towards each other. And of course, the great thing about a railroad is it's fast. The bad thing about a railroad is that it can't handle much incline or turn, right? Railroads have to go pretty straight. In fact, the most a railroad can go is up to about a 2% grade for a climb. So the big fat challenge is that between Sacramento and Donner Summit is 7,000 feet of elevation gain, and only 85 miles to do it in. If you add that up, that comes out to almost exactly a 1.5% grade per mile, which means that to construct a railroad between here and there, it has to be almost a perfectly straight ramp. And this is what they did. They ended up, it's kind of an amazing engineering project when you go back and read about it. They did it in just 7 years, between 1862 and 1869. The railroad coming from the east was laying down about a mile of track a day, which is just incredible. It was a lot slower out here because there was mountains of granite literally mountains of granite they had to go through. They had 13 different tunnels to be able to make this work, and they were blasting through solid granite to do it. They were using over 25,000 pounds of black powder a day. And each tunnel face, they could get about a foot of progress a day. During the middle of the process, nitroglycerin was invented, and that almost doubled. It went to 1.5 feet a day per face. They actually sunk a vertical tunnel shaft in the middle of the longest tunnel so they could open up 4 faces of working on it at once. And within 7 years, they constructed this incredible railway that connected the West Coast and the East Coast. Leland Stanford nailed the final golden spike in at Promontory Point in Utah in 1869. Only 20 years after gold was discovered. I think that's incredible. Amazing feat of preparing a way, and then people could go back and forth smoothly. This idea of preparing a way to make things easier has been around a very long time. In fact, it is what happened when monarchs, important people back in the ancient world, were going to go someplace. They would actually start doing community infrastructure week and preparing, straightening out their roads, making them better so that the person who is important could have an easier time of coming. There's this Egyptian stela that was discovered that had this carved in it. The servant is speaking, "I am making known to the assistant scribe and the Jatjat authority that the builder has not yet reached Rudjet in order to prepare the road for the governor of Dimiu. May you please send the assistant scribe and order the builder to be dispatched." It's what happened. This is from probably 3000 BC. When rulers went different places, they prepared the path. They made it better, straightened the roads out, cleared up, cut out the trees that have fallen down over it, make things straighter and smoother, even out the curves. Today we have these two passages using this metaphor of preparing a way. I love this text in Luke. It has some incredible irony in this juxtaposition, right? Because the first few verses are starting out naming everyone who's in charge of all the systems, right? In the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius, who is the emperor of Rome, the most important system going. It is also the time when Herod Antipas is ruler in Judea, and Pontius Pilate was governor in Judea. Herod Antipas was ruler over Galilee. His brother Philip is the ruler here. It names Annas and Caiaphas as the high priests who are in charge of the religious system. After naming all that, listen to this sentence. At this time, a message from God came to John, the son of Zechariah, who was living in the wilderness. There's all these powerful systems in place. Where does God show up speaking? In the wilderness. Apart from all of that. Now, I'm a huge wilderness fan. There's probably no place I'd rather be, actually, than out in the middle of wilderness. It's where I experience God's presence most deeply. It's where I feel the deepest peace. I love being out hiking, backpacking, being in that incredible beauty, away from all of the constructs that we put up. Wilderness in the Bible is very symbolic of this, of being away from these human systems, these things we've created. And it is precisely away from all of the things that we've made that God starts speaking. And of course, it's quoting Isaiah, saying, "Make straight the way. Take the high parts and bring them down. Take the low parts and raise them up. Take the bent parts and straighten them. Take the rough parts and smooth them out. Because the King is coming." This is an incredible invitation on so many levels, because of course it's asking us to make space, to make room, to prepare a path for God, which implies the most amazing thing, right? That God is coming to us. I think we skip over that a little too quickly. This invitation to prepare a way is completely based on the entire premise that God wants to be with us and in us and among us. which means we are each invited into this incredible project of making that process easier and smoother and better, inviting God in, preparing this way. This beautiful passage from Baruch gets after this as well. I love this. Take off the garment of your sorrow and affliction, O Jerusalem. Put on forever the beauty of the glory from God. What an incredible metaphor. Taking off this suffering, this sadness, this being dejected and down and depressed, being discontent, being at war. Taking those things off and putting on the beauty of what God offers us. Put on your head the diadem of the glory of the everlasting. Put on the robe of righteousness that comes from God. We rightly probably take a look at ourselves and think we don't have righteousness. We don't have glory. We don't have what it takes to be this. But where does this come from? This clothing we are invited to put on comes from God. This righteousness that we get to envelop ourselves in is a gift from the God who very much wants to join us, to be with us. I think, by the way, since we're talking about peace this week, we just misunderstand the idea of righteousness. It's an unfortunate quirk in the English translation that righteousness for us, we probably think of rightness before we think of everything else. And when we think of righteous, we think of someone probably who is following all the rules and doing everything perfectly, right? That is, we could not be further off of the Hebrew understanding of righteousness. Maybe the best way to explain it is the Christmas story, where the text says that Joseph discovers that Mary is pregnant, right? What does Torah say to do when someone is pregnant outside of marriage? Stone them. You call them to account, right? Matthew very much says, Joseph was a righteous man, so he, instead of calling Mary out, sent her away quietly. Righteousness in Hebrew very much implies compassion. It means showing mercy to the people around us. Joseph is a righteous man, so he does not use the law against someone. Instead, he shows mercy. We are called to prepare the way for God. We are called to put on the garment of righteousness from God. To take God's mercy and compassion and to make that the thing that clothes us, that is between us and those around us. This passage from Baruch is so beautiful. God will give you evermore the name Righteous Peace Godly Glory. What's a name? What is your name? It's who you are. It's what defines you. For God to give us the name Righteous Peace Godly Glory is such a profound statement. This is supposed to be who we are. We are righteous peace and godly glory. This means God is seeking, we are created in the image of God. This goes back to the very beginning. That God is seeking to draw us into being the kind of people who are defined by righteousness, by this mercy, this compassion. That righteous peace, that is of course what leads to peace, right? When we start treating one another with mercy, with compassion, wars cease. It is when we are willing to lay down our weapons and stop seeing this as a zero-sum game where we're all in competition with one another. And instead, seeing this as this incredible mutual endeavor where we are all inextricably connected, where we belong to one another, where we are God's plan for caring for and shaping and taking care of this place and one another. This is how we become glorious. Irenaeus said the glory of God is a person fully alive. And God, could not identify or agree with that more, that we become the glory of God as we do this, as we start taking care of each other, as we are clothed with compassion and mercy and lift one another up and care for one another and heal one another. Arise on Jerusalem, stand on the height, look toward the east and see your children gathered from the west and the east at the word of the Holy One, rejoicing that God has remembered them. What a beautiful image. Us, our kids. We're all kids too. All of us gathered together at the Word of God, included home, belonging. This is what peace in the Jewish, it's shalom. And as Westerners, we're very conditioned to thinking of peace as the absence of conflict. And the Jewish concept of peace, of shalom, is so much more. It is wholeness. If you were going to simply pick one, it is all things being whole. It's this picture that Baruch paints of all of the children brought together. That wholeness of every single person having a place, every single person belonging and being cared for, that there's enough for everyone. Shalom, this wholeness, is that there is enough for everyone. There is a seat for every person, that each one of us is invited and included, and that we are God's plan for this in the world, right? That we are that method God has in mind of making this world that kind of place. We either choose to bring peace with us in these interactions with the humans around us, or we bring conflict. This is sin. Sin is deciding that there's not enough and that I have to elevate myself and grab what I can from you because I'm terrified that there won't be enough for me. Trust. What Jesus continually invites us into is the realization and the belief that God is more than enough for you and I. That God is taking care of us. And if I am taken care of, then I am free to take care of the people around me. I don't have to be afraid and terrified and worried that I won't be, that I will go hungry, that I will starve, that I will not be protected. Peace is making sure that there is a place for everyone and everything. It is recognizing that we are each a part of creation and that we each belong, as does my neighbor. Desiring this peace is what opens our hearts to the coming of Christ in us and through us to our world. It is recognizing that being willing to lay down my weapons is precisely what allows Jesus to come, for Christ to enter. I love that the entire premise of this passage, to be able to prepare a way, means that change is possible, right? If we can prepare the way for God to come in us, it means that we can each change. That we can develop new ways of being, of thinking. We can have new systems and convictions. If we may have lived our entire life hurt, wounded. We may have lived our entire life afraid, worried, stressed. But the possibility that we can prepare the way means that the way we have lived to this point doesn't have to be what defines us going forward. We can take some of those high places where we may be too proud, too arrogant, and bring them lower. We can take some of those low places where we have felt like we were awful and had nothing to offer and nothing to give and raise them up. We can take some of the rough places where we've been abrasive and awful to be around and smooth them out. I actually think this matters, of course, preparing the way within us, that we need to show peace to ourselves and compassion to ourselves with the different parts of us who are, of course, make up ourselves. And it is, of course, also true in preparing the way for God to come between us and the relationships with us and our loved ones and the people around us, our coworkers, the people who we may not love yet, that we are also called to prepare the way for Christ to enter there. C.S. Lewis said, we were in Sunday school this morning talking, and this quote came to my mind, that we were talking about idols and how as human beings we often let our hearts go after things that actually don't satisfy, lesser gods, things like money, power, making a difference, achievement, beauty, all of these different applause, all of the different things, people-pleasing that we can go after and seek those things over and above seeking God. And I was reminded of C.S. Lewis's quote where he said, "The problem is not that our desires are too strong. It is that they are too weak. We settle for things that are far less than what our God is offering us." The beautiful, beautiful truth of these passages is that God is offering us precisely what He created us to desire. There is nothing we long for more than God's presence in us, with us, and around us. And this invitation to prepare a way means that God is coming and we are being given exactly what we most long for. We're being given precisely what we most need. And we have the beautiful and wonderful call and invitation of being able to partner with God in that process. That what we do matters, how we think, how we believe, that we get to prepare the way or not, right? We can do the reverse and we can dig ditches and moats and build walls. But we're called to do the opposite. We're called to tear the obstructions down, to make it a better, smoother path for God into ourselves, into our relationships. We can be vehicles of peace and righteousness here in this world. One of my favorite stories, probably in history, is the Christmas Eve truce of 1914. It was the middle of trench warfare. It was awful. Again, a bunch of people fighting each other because some guy shot some other guy. And millions and millions of people being killed because of this. And Germans and English were on opposite sides of trenches in Belgium, and it was Christmas Eve, and the Germans started singing Silent Night. The Englishmen started singing along. They stopped shooting at each other. The Germans came out and started hauling some of the bodies of their fallen comrades back in. The English got out of their trenches and helped them. They started sharing their food. There was one place where a soccer game broke out. They started telling stories about their kids back home, about their wives, their loved ones. The violence stopped. This is what we are called to. The end of the story breaks my heart. They wouldn't go back to fighting till officers from like the respective, they weren't even there. People back on their home fronts came in and threatened to shoot them unless they started shooting each other. This is a whole other sermon, but that's the point where love says, you can shoot me, but I'm not shooting my brother. But that's a whole other sermon. That peace that we are invited into, where we lay down our weapons and recognize that you and I are all brothers and sisters, every single one of us. We don't need to be shooting at each other anymore. As we light this candle of peace, as we invite Christ into us, we recognize that there is enough space for each of us, that we are all part of God's family, and we each belong. Let's sing our hymn of response, Come Thou Long Expected Jesus, as an invitation for God to come into our hearts as we have prepared this way.